Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Robert Jensen, a professor in the School of Journalism at the University of Texas at Austin, where he teaches courses in media, law, ethics, and politics, and is a Regents Outstanding Teaching Award winner, a board member of Culture Reframed, and the Third Coast Activist Resource Center. His books include Citizens of the Empire, The Struggle to Claim Our Humanity, Writing Dissent, Taking Radical Ideas from the Margins to the Mainstream, and his latest book just out is The End of Patriarchy, Radical Feminism for Men. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Jensen.
Great to be with you, Ian.
And Robert, of course, we often talk when things go awry in Texas, as they often do, but this time the governor himself is referring to the mass shooting down near San Antonio as the largest mass shooting in the state's history. How are Texans relating to this, given that it's very much a gun culture down there?
Yeah, I think there are several reactions based on what I've seen from students and people in the office today. One is, of course, it's horrifying. Any mass shooting is horrifying, but especially the idea of coming into a church is particularly difficult. But then on the flip side, I don't want to be glib, but these are now almost routine, and it doesn't, of course, lessen the horror of it. But I think this kind of thing, if it had happened 10 years ago, would have gripped the entire campus here in attention. And it's kind of business as usual around here, even though, we're only about an hour and a half away from where this shooting took place here in Austin. And it says something about how we don't lose our humanity, but we do kind of get dulled to the horror sometimes. And I think that's what's happening here today.
Well, but your campus at the University of Texas was where the first mass shooting, at least in the modern era, took place back in 1963.
Right. And, of course, at that point, it was unthinkable. Gentleman Charles Whitman, who apparently suffered from a brain tumor or some sort of psychotic episode, goes up to our tower, the highest building on campus, with a rifle and shoots, I think it was 17, 18 people dead. But again, at this point, people barely remember that because there has been this sort of steady parade of carnage in the United States, this mass violence happening in places that, in a sense, we want to feel safe, such as a college campus or a church. And this is where we've gone the last half century in this country.
Well, the Texas Attorney General is now saying that people should be able to take guns into churches.
Yeah, I mean, this is the debate that goes on. It certainly went on this campus after state legislature passed a concealed carry weapon. So at the University of Texas campus where I am, if a person has a concealed carry permit, which you have to be 21 to have and meet a background check, so there aren't very many people on this campus with a concealed carry permit, but if you do have one, you can carry a gun on campus. And the argument was always, that this was going to make us unsafe. It was going to put more guns on campus, and whenever there are more guns, there's more gun violence. The alternative argument, the response was, no, this is going to make us safer, because once you have people who are good people, that is, people who are legally carrying a weapon, they're going to somehow save us from all this violence. And so that argument goes on. Now, it does appear in this case that a citizen did engage the shooter, and I expect this will now be evidence touted forever about how if everybody's armed, we're safer. But it doesn't take much to think about the consequences of guns like that in the culture. In Texas, by the way, and I'm not sure what the current law is in California, in Texas you can carry what they call a long gun, which basically means a rifle, without a permit in public, in the open. And that includes not just, hunting rifles or shotguns that you might go duck hunting with. This means these semi-automatic AR-15 kinds of rifles that are used in these crimes. So just to give you an example of how scary this is, there was a protest, an anti-fascist protest in downtown Austin over the weekend. I was out of town and missed it. But then there was a response from, I guess not the pro-fascists, but from the, Sons of Confederate Veterans types. And as there's this kind of conflict out on public streets, there were people walking around openly carrying an AR-15. And I don't know how anybody's going to feel safe in that kind of environment. Individual citizens, of course, aren't going to feel safe. Law enforcement aren't going to feel safe because they're in a highly charged atmosphere with lots of armed civilians. I mean, this is just a recipe for more of these kinds of disasters.
Well, the shooter, Devin Patrick Kelly, apparently bought this gun, a Ruger AR assault rifle, at a store in San Antonio. But he had tried previously, apparently, had tried to get a license to conceal carry license and was denied by the state. And the governor now is saying, quote, I'm quoting Abbott, "So how was it that he was able to get a gun? By all the facts that we seem to know, he was not supposed to have access to a gun. How did this happen?"
Well, that's what no one seems to know the answer to. So as you point out, the weapons in two separate occasions were purchased legally, and he passed the instant background check. I'm suspecting that some of this has to do with the fact that the conviction for domestic violence, which doesn't really capture the kind of violence he inflicted on both his wife and his child, but that was in the military system of justice. It happened while he was on a base. He was, you know, in the Air Force, and he was court-martialed for it. It's possible that for some reason that conviction, that adjudication of his violent behavior didn't make it into the background check system. You know, maybe this will all get sorted out in the coming days. But, you know, again, independent of maybe a glitch, a screw-up, a mistake, whatever, there's one thing we always come back to. If you put more guns in circulation, there will be more gun violence. That is probably the only thing that is sort of beyond argument in this whole debate. More guns equals more people killed by guns. And, you know, apart from all these questions about his background and who screwed up, I think that's one thing we should always talk about after one of these incidents, that this is just predictable. Of course, we don't know how to predict who will do the shooting and who will die. But we know these kinds of things are, in fact, inevitable.
But when you talk about more guns equals more violence and more gun deaths, that is not the direction we're heading in. Now, after the massacre in Las Vegas, it did feel as though maybe something would happen in terms of laws to protect citizens against these serial massacres that happen all too frequently. That sort of died down. The NRA even suggested they'd maybe ban bump stocks as a kind of a gesture to ward off any other more realistic gun control measures. But then, of course, the Terrorist Act in New York took that one off the headlines, and now it's back on the headlines with 26 people killed, the youngest victim being a 17-month-old child, the oldest being 77 years old. 10 of the 20 wounded are in critical condition, so maybe it will come back. But since your new book, The End of Patriarchy, Radical Feminism for Men, deals so much with domestic violence, and there's so much about it in this horrible incident that just took place in near San Antonio. The killer, of course, killed his grandmother-in-law. He apparently was looking for his mother-in-law. He had texted her threats, but let's go back to the actual why he got drummed out of the Air Force. He not only beat up his wife, but he beat up his child, didn't he?
Yeah, and quite violently, enough to perhaps fracture a skull. So, you know, this is, again, tragically routine in this culture. And in the book that you're mentioning, The End of Patriarchy, which, by the way, is, as I always say, is an aspirational title. I'm not predicting the end of patriarchy is anywhere near. It's something we aspire to. You know, I think this is exactly the time we should be talking about this. So after these kinds of incidents and people start talking about gun control laws, everybody says on the right says, well, let's not play politics in a time of tragedy. Well, I think we should be always talking about politics, and not only politics in terms of legislation, but a deeper politics, in this case, a feminist politics of the critique of men's violence and the kind of socialization into masculinity that, again, makes that violence inevitable. By that, I'm not saying men are always and irrevocably violent. I'm saying that when you socialize men in the way we do in a society like this, that these levels of violence are inevitable. If masculinity, if your sense of what it means to be a male human being, is rooted in your ability to control, and that's, I think, at the core of the way we socialize boys and men into masculinity, this obsession with control, if that's the core of how you see yourself, then any threat to take that control away from you is going to be met with resistance, and in some number of cases that resistance will be violence. Because after all, violence and aggression is not something we try to dissuade men from, we encourage it. Think about athletics, think about, you know, football, boxing, all of these sports where violence is encouraged. Think about the way we glorify the military, the way that we, you know, turn violence into something always heroic. So, you know, in some sense, again, I don't want to seem glib, but none of this should be surprising. It's the way that we've organized our society and the way we've organized ourselves, the way we understand ourselves. And unless we can accept a feminist critique of this, I don't see much hope. And of course, feminism is not a movement, you know, that is strong in this country. We need to rebuild that movement.
Well, when you talk about masculinity, I do see a direct link between guns and masculinity. I mean, so many of these young misfits that take guns to school do so because it makes them feel like a man. It makes them feel important. So much of the movies and TV that we see are based upon the idea that the gun is the thing that settles scores. You know, you can go back to the John Wayne Westerns, etc. It's always manliness is also associated with being a gunslinger. And in other cultures, in Australia, for example, if somebody pulled a gun or a knife in a fight, that would be considered an act of abject cowardice. So what happened to this country? Because the West wasn't full of guns. They used to have to hand their guns in when they came into town. So it's largely been mythologized, I think, by the media, by books and television and movies. But I think it's had a pernicious effect on young boys. You talk about boys turning to violence. At the same time, they turn to guns, don't they? They're inextricably bound.
Absolutely. You know, guns are a way to assert that control. And if masculinity is all about control, and you are constantly shown images of men taking control through guns, then that is going to be, I think, something that, you know, people think about all the time, and people accept without thinking often. So, you know, is this the fault of the media? Well, certainly, you know, mass-mediated storytelling in the United States is incredibly powerful. Movies, television, and of course, let's not forget video games, which are also a form of storytelling. If you grow up as a boy in this culture, you're saturated with images of violence, especially violence through the gun. So it's both nominally, you know, frowned upon to commit these acts of violence because, after all, it's illegal and, you know, responsible parents are telling you not to do it. At the same time, the culture is embracing it, and often parents are giving you mixed messages. Many fathers, for instance, will, you know, in certain situations chastise a child for breaking the rules. But there's also still a lot of, I think, support for being violent when you're a child, whether, again, that's in sports where, you know, you're cheered for a really savage hit on an opponent in football, or whether it's, you know, being told that you stuck up for yourself and, you know, beat up the other kid who was giving you trouble. I mean, all of these messages are still common in the culture. I don't want to say the culture doesn't change. Certainly the world is somewhat different than when I was growing up in the 1960s and 70s. But in some ways, while we've become a little more civilized, we've also, as you pointed out, become much more brutal, especially in our media storytelling. And as, you know, every parent knows, television, movies, and video games are a whole lot more powerful than parents wagging a finger at you telling you to behave.
But in terms of the going back to guns and the use of guns and the fact that nothing gets done about these massacres, and You recall after the young kids were massacred at the Sandy Hook Elementary School, Obama broke down in tears and frustration because he simply couldn't get anything passed. He couldn't take advantage of this. And it's true, the mantra amongst gun lovers and conservatives is that let's just pray and hold hands and all this worthless stuff rather than do anything about these repetitive massacres. So that's how we've sort of gone off the rails. But how do you think you can get to a new paradigm here in this argument? Because my sense is, and it's almost in the way that the Second Amendment is framed, well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state. Well, we're not secure in a free state. That's the problem. The majority is not secure because the rights of the minority to own so many guns has gotten out of hand.
Yeah.
And most of the guns in this country are owned by, I think, something like about 8% of the population.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're asking, is there a rational path to this conversation in a political context, I think the answer is quite clearly no. I mean, let's just look at something obvious. No one, even the most fanatical NRA member, argues that the Second Amendment gives me, an individual, a right to own, let's say, a surface-to-air missile, okay? If I said to you, Ian, I have a Second Amendment right to own a surface-to-air missile, you would just chuckle. So we already acknowledge that given the incredible sophistication of advanced weaponry, it would be literally insane to believe that every individual has a right to own any hardware they want. So we accept that there will be limitations. But then we make these arbitrary, you know, dividing lines, and somehow there's a constitutional right to have a semi-automatic rifle, an AR-15, which is essentially a machine gun, you know, slightly modified. All right, now, how is that understood to be some sort of constitutional right? It's all long ago left the realm of rational conversation. And the other reality is now there are so many guns in this culture that even if you were to pass sensible gun legislation, we still have a problem of the incredible number of guns in circulation. And as someone who lives in Texas and you know, sort of has a perhaps a more visceral sense of this than, you know, in L.A., if you passed such gun legislation, there's now a significant component of the population that simply wouldn't acknowledge it. And I don't mean, you know, the criminals on the street. I mean, you know, law-abiding citizens who believe this is, you know, a line in the sand. And when you look around at this culture and how little it takes to set off violence, I don't see a way out of this. Now, you know, I don't want to be negative. I know that often people much smarter than me can craft, you know, campaigns and legislative proposals that can win support. But, you know, I'm 59 years old, and I've been watching this play out my entire adult life. And I see no reason to think that we're going to correct the course we've been on.
No, and indeed, just in closing, it does seem that the fact that a citizen, armed citizen down there near San Antonio, Texas, was able to shoot the shooter as he came out of the church, wound him, and then chase him in the car, and eventually he crashed the car, and he called his father and said that he was not going to make it because of the gunshot wound that he had, and then apparently he shot himself.
Yeah.
That's likely to get mythologized, right, by the NRA.
Yeah.
What's the catchphrase they use? The only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun?
Yeah, and you're right. You're absolutely right. It's going to be mythologized. It angers me because imagine an alternative scenario where the man who confronted the shooter was inexperienced and started shooting himself and shot a bystander. Imagine that when he jumped in the car with the other bystander and they roared off at 95 miles an hour, they had run over a baby in the road. You know, law enforcement is trained. Now, you know, we know the problems with law enforcement, but you know, this idea that citizens should just pick up a gun and speed off in a high-speed chase on the highway is also dangerous. It didn't happen that way this time. We're lucky. It did intervene. It did probably save lives. But, you know, in the future, there's no guarantee of that. And again, a rational assessment of this would say it's very dangerous if you have the idea that all citizens are going to suddenly be sort of deputized to start shooting. I can't imagine a healthy future that way as well. But the mythology will start, and it's already started. You can see it on the news already.
Well, Robert Jensen, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Great. Thanks. Great to be with you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Robert Jensen. He's a professor in the School of Journalism at the University of Texas at Austin, where he teaches courses in media, law, ethics, and politics, and is the Regents Outstanding Teaching Award winner. His latest book just out is The End of Patriarchy, Radical Feminism for Men. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back examining the presidential trip underway in Japan, where Donald Trump is urging the Japanese to buy American weaponry to shoot down North Korean missiles out of the sky.